Welcome. We are settling into this moment, leaving behind the nervous energy of the city. Which it's very easy to absorb and carry around with you, and then you become part of it. It may not be quite as nervous as New York or Hong Kong, but it's nervous enough. The location is beautiful, the room, the space. The most important thing about any room is not what you see, but what you don't see, it's the space. That applies to yourself also. But the location, I didn't choose it, it just happened. It's important, significant. Right in the middle of the old structures of our society. There's Whitehall, Westminster Abbey, Parliament. And they don't realize that in the midst of this, right here, a new consciousness arises out of the old. And that's the larger context of our gathering this afternoon, the arising of a new human consciousness. Now, you don't need to believe that for this to work for you. You might say, I don't believe it's arising, never mind. You are here. That's all that matters. Now, it seems that we are going to spend this afternoon together. And when I say that, that's already not totally true. It's true in a conventional sense, in relative terms. Yes, of course we are spending the afternoon together. In absolute terms, there is no afternoon except in your mind as a thought form. Afternoon is ultimately no more than a thought form in your mind. You're projecting forward, and you call it the afternoon. So in absolute terms, we are not spending the afternoon together. We are only together here at this moment. Because when it's 3 o'clock, it'll be this moment. When it's 4 o'clock, it'll be this moment. When it's 5 o'clock, it'll be this moment. The one thing almost everybody ignores. And so we are becoming acquainted here with a level of consciousness that we could call timeless, where the usual structures of the human mind are not operating anymore. That you don't need to understand these words. Don't try to figure out what they mean. Just let them sink in. Something from within responds. You already know all this. You are being reminded. If you are new to this, I'd like to just point out this is not a lecture. As you can see, the speaker has not prepared anything, no clipboard or lecture notes. Or program. And it's not a workshop either. So if you expect a lecture or workshop, you would be disappointed. It's called an intensive. Humans like to attach names to things, so we had to find a name. It's called an intensive. Now, you might ask, what could there possibly be intensive about a man sitting on a chair and people listening? What's intensive about that? Perhaps you can understand intensive if we were doing a workout for 3 hours, physically, energetically. That's an intensive, and then you feel you have achieved something. You can understand it on that level. Not that there's anything wrong with workouts. They can take you into presence too. Or if we were doing emotional work here, everybody going through weeping and screaming and having one catharsis after another, that could be called an intensive too, but it's unlikely to happen here either. It could, if it happens to one or two people, that's fine. And not that there's anything wrong with emotional work, it has its place, and that also can take you into that the state of consciousness of presence if you go into the emotion and through it. But that's not what we're doing here either. And then an intensive could be mental work. We could be doing Sudoku all afternoon long, becoming more and more complex. Let's work that out. Or highly complex philosophical problems about the nature of the universe. Let's try to understand. Or the nature of the human being, the complex makeup of a human being, that would all be, on the mental level, could be very intensive. Not that there's anything wrong with the mental level. That also could take you, because eventually you get so exhausted that the mind stops. So if it's not physical, it's not emotional, it's not mental, although these three levels could occasionally arise in you. Of course, the mind will say whatever it says while you sit here. The body may go through this or that, and the emotions may arise and subside. That's fine. But that is not why this is an intensive. It's not an intensive on that level. The intensity is the consciousness that arises. And the language, we don't even have a word for it in our language, this fine energy that arises here as we sit here together, which sometimes we call presence, which we could call stillness, which we could call pure awareness. That is why you're here, for this to arise in you. So it is for you to tune into that energy field that arises here. That requires a certain alertness. And you may find that occasionally your mind stops thinking. That's where we want to get to. And yet, you don't fall asleep. Well, some of you may fall asleep. That is not the worst defense mechanism against the new consciousness, because even if you fall asleep, a little bit will seep in, and maybe next year suddenly it's there. There are other ways in which the habitual mind patterns in you try to come up and interfere with this moment. I'm pointing out a few just so that you recognize them when they arise. Especially helpful perhaps for people who haven't been to any of these talks, intensives. Boredom. Now, what is boredom? Boredom is the stream of thinking is not receiving enough stimulus. So it gets restless, looking for something to absorb and not finding it. That's the frustration. And that's boredom. Now you may notice in yourself or the person sitting next to you, but most importantly in yourself, you start losing the alertness and perhaps the mind takes you away completely from here and now, and you start thinking about your problems, tonight's dinner, where you have to go, what you did, what you're going to do. You may find a restlessness coming in. You may find your legs start twitching or moving. You're not here anymore. This is a normal human condition. If a dog did it, we would take him to the vet. But for humans, it's normal. And if that happens, observe it in yourself and you say, oh, there's my leg twitching, going, shaking. And you can then feel the energy that's behind that. Another defense mechanism could be anger in certain people in whom anger is more or less habitual. And so the mind says, come on, get on with it, what are you talking about? So whatever arises as we sit here, if you can acknowledge that that's what's arising, then it doesn't have you in its power. Whatever thoughts come up, emotions come up, physical energy moving through, if you just be there as the space for whatever arises, it doesn't control you anymore. So you don't push it away. You say, this is what is. And so gradually we disidentify from the movement of thought that most people are totally overpowered by. We disidentify also from the emotions that go with these thoughts. Disidentify is no repression, it's just know it's there. There it is. If you can sit here and actually enjoy being here and listening, that enjoyment comes from a deep place within you. That means you are connected beyond the person to that deeper dimension of consciousness. That's all that's needed. If you are not connected, it's hard to sit here the whole afternoon. If you're only here as a head, a thinking mind, it would become very frustrating. So for those of you who are still just the thinking mind and wondering what this is all about, I'd like to now to take us to the doorway of the new state of consciousness. That's why we're here. The doorway is always, on top of it, it says, present moment. All there is. This is the key to what we sometimes call self-realization, is to be present with what is now. So that you are not alienated from the present moment, you are not a stranger to the present moment. Now, a very simple, many of you know this, a very simple way of anchoring yourself in the present moment is body, inner body, not the outer body. What is the inner body? The sense of aliveness as you sit here, and to take some attention into that right now. And I will continue to remind you throughout to use that as an anchor for presence. For those of you who cannot yet feel the inner body, a very simple way of finding out what it means to indwell, so to speak, the body is to hold up your right or left hand, close your eyes, and ask yourself, how can I know if my right hand is still there or not? Without moving my hand, without touching anything, how can I know it? Now, not from memory, not saying, of course I know because I just saw it, that's why I know it's there. No, not like that. To know it's there energetically, then you can feel the energy in the right hand or the left hand. And in the same way, you can feel the energy in the rest of your body, and that is inhabiting your body. That is not yet the ultimate, but it is the doorway. The doorway into presence, the doorway into being, the doorway into a sense of self that is infinitely deeper than who you thought you were. An I of infinite depths, and that's only the doorway, feeling the inner body into it. So you have when you use the word I, which to most people is the most important word in their vocabulary, because they use it all the time, I, this, I, that, I don't know, or me, or mine, or I. Usually that refers to a sense of self that is made up of thought, a mind-made sense of self. It's your story, it's your problems, it's all the things that make up your life. It is the content of your mind. So when people say I, what they're referring to is the content of their mind, the predominant patterns, thought patterns, that continuously revolve in your mind. And so you identify with those thought patterns, and they give you your sense of self. And those thought patterns create emotions. Emotions are the energy of the body responding to the activity of the mind. So the two together then form the so-called I, and that is your person, your personal me. And that is what absorbs most people's attention most of the time. I have to look after me, I have to worry about me. And if they worry about other people, it's because these other people are important to me. So you could worry about your children or your parents or this or that, but they're important to me. So it's all to do with me. And the me is problematic. There's no me that is not problematic, very problematic. And you can never get away from the problems that this I encounters, and not only encounters, but generates. The mind-made me generates problems. It generates drama and conflict. It needs that to feel. It doesn't know that it needs to generate it. It says these things just happen. Wherever you go, people are in conflict. Go to families. If you find a family that's not in conflict, either they are all enlightened or they are no longer fully alive. So if you come home, drink your beer, switch on the TV, watch for 4 hours, go to bed, then get up in the morning, go to work, no conflict anymore, but you're not alive anymore. And then go to at work. It's surprising that they get anything done at all because they're all fighting. And then come larger collectives, countries, political parties, gold parliament, and that's relatively benign, those things, conflict in parliament, but then there's a larger conflict of countries, warfare, and so on. The false sense of self, disconnected from the deeper level of your being, generates suffering, unconscious suffering. I'm not the first person to say that. The Buddha said it 2,600 years ago, the self is suffering. It generates suffering. To live like that, disconnected from the depths of your being, generates suffering. Now this we need to see clearly, because we need to recognize dysfunction, suffering, madness, whatever you call it, we need to recognize it for what it is. Now, very unconscious people who are totally identified with their mind, to them everything seems to happen. Other people do it to me. They don't realize that they generate suffering for themselves. They make themselves suffer and for others. So if you look at your life on that level, Every life is very problematic. And now, so we are not here to solve the problems of the surface self. On that level alone, they cannot be solved. Unless you go deeper. I don't remember who said it, it was Jung or Einstein or somebody like that, said the problems of mankind cannot be solved from the same level of consciousness that created those problems. Now, when I say there is the possibility of waking up out of that unconscious pattern. And that waking up is not some new thing that you add to your mind. We are not here because I'm trying to convince you that you are more than the person, the personal self. Because then I would be creating a new religion that would say, we believe in the transcendent self. Another thought form. And of course, to identify with mental concepts is everybody's religion. Even if they say they have no religion, they do. It's their opinions and viewpoints and mental concepts that they cling to. That if you challenge them, they will quickly go, not that. So we are not creating some new belief. We're investigating, but not analytically, experientially, a deeper level within yourself. And we call, this can be called self-realization, and that is not that we find a new self that is bigger than the little self, not quite, because when we say that we find a new self that's bigger than the little me, we've created some new structure. That's why the Buddha, very wisely used the word emptiness. But that's misleading, unfortunately, too. But it doesn't force it. One good thing about it, it doesn't give you anything to believe in. Very clever. It's the most uninspiring term any spiritual teacher has ever used. What are you trying to achieve? Emptiness. What is your ultimate reality? Emptiness. Oh. But this may also be why Buddhism remained a relatively sane religion compared to others, because you cannot very well say that my emptiness is better than yours. But what does that word actually refer to? It refers to your essential being as formless, not form. The little me is form. The body has a physical form for a little while. It gradually withers like a fruit. Fruit does it within a week, 10 days. You leave an apple for 10 days. Or if you put a camera on it and speed up the film, it it would be quite amazing. You see how the form is short-lived, and you see the apple goes with us and gets... And the same thing happens to the human body, of course. And for people who have been identified, who derived their sense of self partly from the physical form, that is suffering. One of the forms in which suffering arises. And then there is the psychological form that we've been talking about, the me, with its problems and its stories and its past and its projected future, which it hopes will complete my experience of myself. The future will complete the me, is the unconscious belief. That's why everybody is much more interested in the future than the present moment, because they are looking for themselves in the next moment. If you're rushing to get somewhere or to get something done, you believe that that moment that you want to get to is more important than this moment, and that moment will, when you get there, somehow it will free you for a deeper sense of aliveness. That's why you're trying to get there. Why else would you try to get to the future? And does the future ever do that? No, it can't. Why not? Because it's only a thought form. It never has no existence except in your head as a thought. Is that true? It cannot not be true, because otherwise somebody would have experienced the future. Sometimes some great explorer, the first man to ever experience the future, which everybody wants to get to, but you can't. Because a future is only a thought form. It's fine for practical purposes, moving about bodies from here to there, catching a train, meeting a person, nothing wrong with that. Beyond that, it's a dreadful limitation to be trapped in that thought form and be dominated by that thought form and expecting some kind of release or fulfillment, or some kind of addition, thinking, when I get there, I will have added enough to myself and I can finally be complete. Whatever, and what people want to add to their deficient sense of self, because every sense of self is deficient and condemned to remain deficient. I don't want to destroy anybody's illusion prematurely. The deficient sense of self remains deficient. What people are trying to add to their deficient sense of self so that they can feel fully dwelling in the aliveness of being. Being fully yourself, that's what people want. Being fully yourself. They may express it in different ways. How they want to achieve that on a very rudimentary level. Perhaps you want to rob a bank or make enough money so that you can buy the things that will complete you. And then other things, relationships, when I get this or that possession, this or that achievement, recognition from other people, when I get that, or some sense of creating something that makes a difference in the world. Of course, that's a wonderful thing, but as long as you need it to fulfill yourself, it's much less likely to happen. And then come the spiritual people. They want to add some spiritual attainment and then complete themselves through that. Oh, I forgot to mention the intellectual people, or so-called, they're reaching for some kind of knowledge. When I've absorbed enough knowledge, then I'll be full and complete. Now, knowledge, of course, grows every day because they cut things into smaller and smaller slithers. And so you can't possibly absorb, if you're writing a PhD, you realize how small the area of your expertise has become. You're no longer writing about the plant, you're writing about the leaf of the plant, or a section of the leaf of the plant. You're not writing about the animal, you're writing about, as a friend of mine did a PhD, on the inner ear. He didn't write a PhD on the field mouse, but the inner ear of the field mouse. It took 3 years. And now he's the expert, but now there are other people who are even dividing that into smaller slithers, a section of the inner ear of the field mouse. So, and this is when increased knowledge is getting us. It has its place for practical purposes, but as human beings, it's not really getting us anywhere. Otherwise, the enlightening transformations would come from the universities. But there's a whole arising, a whole new consciousness totally divorced from the universities. They don't teach any of the things that really matter for transformation. Maybe they did once. I don't want to discourage anybody, young person, from going to university, but just realize the relativity of it. That's not the answer. And when you become a professor, you'll be just as unhappy as you are now, if you're unhappy now. So the adding to, including this event, if you move within the old structures of your mind, you are hoping that this event will add something to who you are, which you can then take home. If I were distributing a handout, everybody gets a folder of 15, 20 pages of things that we have gone through this afternoon. It would be very satisfying because it would symbolize what something you've added to it. And I'm more now than I was before. Now, it's so frustrating to sit here if you are totally identified with their mind, because when you leave here now, you're not going to be more. Hopefully, less. Because it's only by realizing the relative insignificance of the person that you begin to go beyond and say, okay, first we need to look at that. Yes, it's very narrow to be trapped in that person. That's a strange word. It comes from Latin and it means mask. But now, if you look, so why did the Latin, the Romans call the person? And per is means through, and the S-O-N is related to the English word sound, because the actors in the theater would wear masks, and the sound would come, when they speak, would come through the mask. That's why a person is called a person. That where the sound comes through, person. Now, every person is claustrophobic. It's a claustrophobic sense of self. Even those you think, oh, they have everything. They've got a private plane. They can go anywhere they like. They have a villa here and a country house there and this there, And so their life seems limitless, and you say, oh, this person's life must be, has no limits. This is what I want, and this is what the papers write about. They say these people are the ones that are to be imitated, or maybe when you're lucky, you'll get there too. And if you meet them, you realize that they are unhappy and fearful, just like everybody else. Their advantage, however, the advantage that they have over ordinary people is that they have nothing else to look forward to. I've met people, and they have realized that's not it. They've realized the whole absurdity of fame, the emptiness of fame, and ultimately wealth, and then suddenly they were ready to go deeper. And those that have achieved everything and are not ready to go deeper become more and more unhappy. They take drugs, the alcohol, and so on. So how do we leave? I'm not saying that you need to eliminate the person, but find that which is deeper than. How do we do that? First of all, we realize the fallacy of believing that you can complete yourself through future. So you're not going to find yourself there because it doesn't exist, future. So all you end up with then is, oh, something that everybody always overlooks, which is now. Now, when I say now, for many people, it's an abstract concept. They say, now, okay. Okay, you've said it now. Now I want to know the next thing. Now, the now is not an abstract concept. The now needs to become a felt reality for you. What we call the now. Let's look at this now and see if we can get deeper into it. Now. This room, sense perceptions, visual sense perceptions, auditory sense perceptions, feeling, sensing sense perceptions. So you hear, you see, yes, that's now, okay. You're breathing, that's now. Okay, there's the body, you can feel the contact body with the chair, okay, that's now. These are all still in the perceptual realm, now. Then you go a little bit deeper into the body and you feel, yes, it's alive. Because you can feel a certain, if only a little bit, a certain sense of aliveness in the body now. So you can be aware of what you see, yes, what you hear, yes, outer body, inner aliveness, okay. Now, if your attention moves into those things, already you may realize you're not thinking that much anymore. Because we are taking attention away from thinking and putting attention into sense perceptions. Now, but some thoughts may still occasionally come up, even as we do this practice, if we want to call it that, and you remain visual, auditory, sensing the body, feeling the outer body, the inner body. Thoughts, okay, little thought comes here, there. Maybe there's still some emotion, maybe not. If there's an emotion, then that you perceive that, the inner realm that's there. Maybe there's a little pain. Maybe somebody here has a toothache, or the little toe hurts, or some larger discomfort. That's also what is now. That is now. So the now, at first instance, consists of a number of things which you can be aware of simultaneously. Although when I talk about it, of course, that's how language works, in succession. But you can be aware simultaneously of the room, the sounds, the inner feeling, whatever is within. You're aware of all that now. So is that the now? No, not yet. You're not there yet. Why not? Okay. This is where confusion arises. People confuse the now with the content of the now. Now, of course, the content of the now changes continuously. This room is full of people now, in a few hours it'll be empty. And so on. Or you can feel a pain here or there now, and in an hour there won't be a pain. Or you feel an emotion, and then it won't be there. Or thoughts, that's the most changeable thing of all. One thing after another arising. It is all now, but it's not the now. It's what happens within the now. Okay. Now, don't try to understand that through thinking. This is not the way. You can't. We are approaching the now, getting close, because when you get into sense perception and inner perception, you are getting closer. There's the content of now. Okay. And how does all this arise? Where does all that arise? The content, the thoughts, the emotions, the sense perceptions, all the things that happen, experiences, events, good, bad, come and go, irritating things, frustrating things. Oh, by the way, there are no irritating things, there are only things, and you bring the irritation to them, but that's a different matter. If you call something irritating, you're confusing the inner and outer. Everything is neutral. The irritation is the suffering that you bring to the event, and it's the resistance, and it's habitual, and it's not personal. It's the human condition. But we are going beyond that now. Things fill the now, we could say. But there's always only now. Which means there must be something unchangeable about all that. There's something that is not subject to this continuous flux, the impermanence, the fleetingness of this world. There's something that's not part of this coming and going. Now, the moment I give it a name, I have already falsified it. That something, even if I say something, I have already falsified it. It's so fine. The moment you give it some form, that's not it. However, I'll continue to speak and give it form, continuously reminding you that's not it. So the words are only pointers to a reality within yourself, and it is vital that you find that, because if you don't find it in this lifetime, you're like a seed that has fallen from a tree and never sprouts. No, that doesn't matter to the tree, and the universe is infinitely abundant, it's fine, because consciousness is evolving anyway. But from a limited viewpoint, it's a pity. from the limited viewpoint of the person, it's a pity if you go through life and never find that which is not subject to decay, to impermanence, what the Buddhists sometimes call the unborn, the uncreated, the unmanifested. All negative terms, very wise, because the moment you give it a positive term, you've made it into content, something, and that's not it. It is the space for all content. Okay. It is essentially you. This moment, visual, auditory, perceptions, thoughts, emotions, what else is there that is continuously overlooked? The space of this moment. Without that, nothing would be here. And what is that space? Now, when you ask that question, the mind wants again to give it a form. The Lao Tse, who wrote this profound book, Tao Te Ching, line one is, the Tao that can be spoken of is not the true Tao. Tao meaning the ultimate reality, whatever you want. But that which you speak of, this is the warning at the beginning of the book. Nothing that I say about it is true in absolute terms. Because language is form. But as long as you know that, that's fine, because then you can use language as a little arrow pointing, no more. It's not an explanation. It's not it. When I now say, the now is essentially who you are at the deepest level. That doesn't make sense to the analytical mind, but if you let that statement sink in and feel that you are the now in which all things happen, it arises, the human drama, and subsides. Now for a moment, there is, you can feel this, the moment the sound of the police car subsided, there was a moment when you could feel a spaciousness that before was filled by the sound. So something disappears, and for a moment you can feel the stillness, the spaciousness more strongly. That is the blessing of death. Because when something dies, which means the form dissolves, it could be just a sound. There's a sound, it comes, and then it dies. There's always an opening into the formless, into the space, into the stillness, whatever you want to call it. At the moment of dissolving, something dissolves, that is the pure, true now. And that is, I'm now using a word, so don't confuse the word with it, consciousness, pure consciousness. Okay, now forget the word. Because the word, if it's not used only as a temporary pointer, becomes a wall. It separates you from the reality. So always remembering, words are only pointers, that's not it. So don't say, now I know what the now is, it's consciousness, and I know what I am the now. Yes, but on what level do you know it? Knowing it means living it now, being the now, now, not just in the head. Now, a very practical way of knowing that you are the unchanging space in which the world comes and goes, the things of the world come and go. An easy way, the most direct, the most practical way to know that reality in yourself. And this is the primordial spiritual practice, is, and it's so simple, not to oppose internally the content of now. Not having an inner opposition, fighting, resisting, condemning, running away from what arises in the space of now. Then you come to a new way of living, which is the content of now. You become friendly with as your spiritual practice. And that's a very rare thing for most people, because their habitual state is they are unfriendly with the present moment. Sometimes in to a small degree, sometimes to an enormous degree, they are unfriendly with the present moment. They are not in alignment with whatever fills the now at this moment. So to be aware of yourself as space, the deeper space, which is stillness, a deep sense of aliveness, stillness, something that you, when you have that, feel, sense that yourself as space, the world can't shake you anymore. It becomes only of relative significance. And conditions that arise are no longer able to determine your inner state. You are no longer at the mercy of external conditions, things that happen, situations, where you are, who you are with, what this person is doing or saying to you. And you are no longer at the mercy of inner conditions, which also change continuously, your thought processes. Most people are victims of their mind, conditioned by their past, by their culture, by their society, and all the stuff, all the unconsciousness and the madness of our society has gone in here and has conditioned the way in which your mind works. It's a dreadful fate, conditioned to be mad. Now, because everybody else is mad, of course you don't know it. And then you look to the mad world to give you some sense of recognition. I want to be somebody in this mad world. Succeed. So true success is knowing yourself as, not as something, That's a temporary form, it's fine. But as space for something, I am not what happens, I am the space in which it happens. I am not my thoughts, I am the space in which the thoughts happen. So the quickest way to that realization is to come to an inner alignment with what happens, inside or outside. Not to deny it, run away from it, resist it. That's the primordial spiritual practice. And that's the only way in which you differ from the great spiritual master. There is no master as an identity. Nobody can say, I have now achieved, I am now the master, the spiritual master. It's another delusion because you have another form identity. Master means the density of the form, or rather the form loses its density. Then the unconditioned space, the formless life, the formless one life, the pure consciousness, whatever little pointer works best for you, that's why I give you several. The formless one life, the consciousness, comes through the form. And how does the density of the person, the mind made, the mental and also emotional density, how does that become transparent to the... It becomes transparent through living in a state of... I reluctantly use that word, surrender. Surrender. Surrender to what is. At this moment, only this. Only this moment. Let's say your outer circumstances are not the best at this moment. You've just been thrown out of your home. You lost your job. You have nothing in your, no money in your pocket, and there you are. What do you do now? How can you not dislike this moment? Easy. You're breathing, and you look around. Sky, bird, people, cars. Feel the inner body. And you become, you say yes to this moment. Not to a story that your mind is inventing about this moment. People confuse that here. When I say yes to what is, people think, okay, then I have to say, okay, I have to accept that I'm a homeless person now, that I have no prospects, that I've thrown away all that I had, or people have taken it away from me. Blah, blah, blah. Stories. No. That's just a story. I'm ruined. I'm ruined. I've no nothing. No, you're not ruined. You have 1.50 in your pocket. That's the reality. I'm ruined is the mental addition to the reality, which is a story. So what is your mental addition to the reality of now? And you'd be amazed what people add to the simplicity of now. The baggage they put onto the simplicity of now with their stories, which sometimes they've carried over from 10 years, 20 years, 30 years of stories inflicted on the now, or whoever you're meeting in the now, or what is happening in the now, and people carry that baggage, and life gets heavier and heavier. No, what do you need a story for? Just come to the simplicity of this moment, just this. And then it's fine. So we are stepping out of story by accepting the simplicity of this moment. And that means you become aligned with the power of life itself, which is not stupid, which is because it's intelligence itself. It's out of it, the entire universe comes out of it. And you're aligned with that, and then suddenly even the external life flows with much greater ease. But that's not why you're doing it. It's not a means to an end. It's an end in itself. Surrender to the present moment as it is. If it's unpleasant, you don't need stories, but there is such a thing as unpleasantness, because you could be cold and hungry. I experienced a short time of not having a home and sitting around on park benches. Fortunately, I was already comfortable with the present moment, so it was extremely enjoyable. Something that other people might have said, it's a dreadful experience. So you have always the two levels in you, the level of the person who goes about its business, but it's very easy to get trapped in that dimension only. So you're going to an important meeting, let's say, okay, you've graduated from being homeless, now you got a good job. You're going to an important meeting, traveling, and you're talking to the lawyers about the contracts and this and that. There's a big project happening, it's all so important, and you get so absorbed in that everything becomes absolutely important. What is relative only becomes absolute. You get lost in the world. And very soon you're in a state of resistance because you need to get there. But the contract hasn't been done yet and there's a time limit. Don't you know you should get yourself together? And, everybody, these days, everything is deadline. There's never anything that people ask me to do that doesn't have a deadline. But it has to be done by Monday, tomorrow, next week. But it has to be ready by, we have deadlines. Most deadlines I don't meet, so people don't even expect deadlines to be met anymore. When they tell me we have a deadline, they already know. And I suspect now they give me false deadlines. If they need it in 4 months' time, they say they need it in 2 weeks. So the world, which is the human mind, and the things of the world can absorb you totally. So is it possible for you to always come back into the other dimension? And that is a beautiful practice. So you're sitting in the office, this person is talking, that person is talking, or you're driving somewhere, the important meeting. And there's a moment when you feel your inner body. There's a moment when you look up at this tree. There's a moment when you breathe, take one conscious breath. There's a moment when you step out of that stream of the world into now. And that becomes so enjoyable that more and more often that dimension is there in your life. Stepping out of the story. And there you are in the lawyer's office discussing divorce proceedings with your husband or wife. And you're looking out of the window. And see, there's a beautiful tree, but you don't even call it a beautiful tree. You just see. And there's not only a tree, you can feel the very presence in which the tree arises. And the lawyer is talking about this or that, and you look, ah. And then you look back to the lawyer and say, okay, do what you have to do, and then you look back at, take a conscious breath. You're continuously stepping out of the stream that wants to absorb your attention completely into the space of now. So you're bringing space into your life. You're bringing space into your life also by accepting, this is surrender, accepting what is brings space, because by saying yes to what arises in the present moment, you become the space for it, which you already are, but didn't know, couldn't feel it, couldn't know that you are the space for the world. By saying yes to the things that arise now, you become powerful, but not in the sense of ego power, not powerful over somebody or something else, but in the sense that the power of life itself is now able to fully flow through you. The power of consciousness itself. Because we have two movements in this world, in a human being. One is the outgoing movement into form that has its place. In everybody, that's the outgoing movement that wants to strengthen and preserve the form of me. And there's nothing wrong with that if you know also the other dimension, which goes the opposite way. It's the need to be connected to the formless vastness of being that is also in you, that is essentially who you are. So there is this, every human life needs to be a balance between form and the depths of formlessness. Otherwise, and the whole world is lost in form. So the dimension, which is the sacred dimension, which is the spiritual dimension, whatever you want to call it, to a large extent in the world, modern culture is completely lacking. It's dreadfully unbalanced, dreadfully unhappy, dreadfully insane. And if humans do not encounter this within themselves now, then simply these forms will no longer be useful in the universe, or the human race would, as if it had never happened. And then the wind blows over the planet, and the animals are suddenly very happy. And all the plants give a sigh of relief. Oh, wow, what was that? Could happen. Doesn't have to happen, but it could happen. At the moment, the humans are so heavy and unenlightened, it's a dreadful burden on the planet. The planet is only just, the planet, of course, is an organism which also is an expression of the one consciousness. It has its own consciousness, which is an expression of the one consciousness. So it's only beginning to realize now what the humans are doing, because the planet is a little bit slower, and on the planetary scale, the humans have only been here for a few minutes. So the planet is only just going, what is going on here? Oh. What can I do to get rid of these? Maybe I'll raise the temperature, have a little fever. That's how the human body gets rid of bacteria. Fever. That might work. Or should I make them infertile? That would be the easiest. Now it's a new, when you become free of the illusion that the conditions of the world, whatever happens to you, that they are here to satisfy you. That things should always go the way you want them to go. The conditions are here to bring me fulfillment. That's a big delusion. Conditions are here to challenge you, to frustrate you, and to wake you up. So instead of seeking better and better conditions, you accept the condition of this moment. And paradoxically, that's when very quickly even the outer conditions that are not all that important improve, because power of life moves through you fully now. So that's a practice, the practice of surrender, in which you become very effective. You don't become ineffective through surrender, which is a misconception. Surrender says, right, this is what is, and I might as well say yes to it. I'm verbalizing it, but true surrender, there's no words. It's just, you look at the situation, what is. You perceive, you look, you become the presence. There's a consciousness. You're aware of yourself as consciousness. That's the little secret of self-realization. Space, stillness, consciousness. And you can feel is not the right word, there is no right word. In the background of all that happens, you can feel yourself as the presence in which it happens. We could call that there is a stillness in the background. It's not the stillness of being dead, it's a vitally alive stillness. Here things happen, and there's the, oh. You're no longer reactive. Responsive, if something needs to be done, yes, but not reactive.